We are so happy to have Reverend Angela Gary back with us. She has a way of centering and recognizing the divine principles of love. She does it all with her breath, you know? So I know that you're in for a treat. I want to welcome Reverend Angela up to the stage.
Hi, lovely ones. So good to see you all. So great to be back here. I've missed you. It feels like a while, huh? All right. So I'm going to start with inviting us all to take a breath. Why not? Let's just keep that breath flowing, that beauty flowing. So you may have heard the story of the musk deer. And there was a musk deer that lived in the Himalayas, up on the rocky terrain there. And they would always smell this intoxicating aroma wherever they went. And they were drawn to this smell, drawn to this aroma. And they kept thinking, maybe, you know, it's in this flower. And they would go close and smell it. No, it wasn't in the flower. They would go toward the goats. It wasn't the goats. Definitely wasn't the goats that had that smell. Maybe it was the grass. Perhaps the butterfly. They spent their lifetime searching for this aroma, this beautiful smell that kept calling them. And then one day, as the deer was getting older, it fell down the rocky terrain of the mountains of the Himalayas. And it was injured, and it was actually dying. And in the falling down, the pouch that was part of the deer kind of got ruptured open. And this amazing aroma arose. This smell that the musk deer had been chasing all her life was right there. And she said, "It's me. It's me. All this time, it's me." So, this doesn't really need any explanation, right? As it is with musk deers, so it is with us. Sometimes we're so busy seeking truth. Sometimes we're so busy seeking spirit, seeking love, seeking the divine in those people, places, and things outside of us. We're seekers, and seekers seek. And there's nothing wrong with seeking, except sometimes the seeking takes us further and further away from where we really need to be looking, deep within our own being. This isn't a matter of bringing spirit to us, searching for spirit out there. It's not a matter of listening for that voice of spirit from out there somewhere. It's about going within and listening. Because as all the great teachers tell us, Raymond Barker included, right? We are unlimited essence. We are divine love. We are the power, the beauty, the peace, the joy of spirit. And I think we're here to bring all that truth down into our being, into the core of our being, to claim it, to know it. Because spirit can't get through where there are blocks in our being. And so we call ourselves back inward, back to the core of our being, trusting that that's where spirit is, that's where spirit lives. And we know that every feeling that we have, whether we judge it to be of spirit or not, is all calling us back to spirit. I had a quote about that that sounded better than what I just said. Sounded better. It's the same. Learning to embrace every feeling we have brings us to spirit. Learning to embrace every feeling we have brings us to spirit, right? It brings us. So we change the habit. We change the habit that some of us have. I'm sure no one in this room has it. But we change this habit of running from that which makes us uncomfortable. We change the habit of perhaps doing spiritual bypass over the sadness, the anger, the fear, the resentment, the disappointment. And instead, we trust that everything in our life supports our awakening. Everything supports our awakening. And the thing about denial and the thing about spiritual bypass is what we resist persists. It hangs in there. And it hangs in there as blockages in our energy centers. I've forgotten the lovely lady's name, I'm so bad with names, that did the meditation this morning. And it was about the chakras, right? The energy centers. And sometimes, we're very busy perhaps opening our heart, which is wonderful, and our spiritual eye and our crown chakra so that we are in the heavens and of spirit, but we forget that perhaps we're constricted in those lower energy centers, that perhaps the energy isn't flowing. Because to change our beliefs, you know, Ernest Holmes, founder of Science of Mind, made it sound very simple. Change your thinking, change your life. That is simple. All spiritual truths are simple. But it's not quite as easy as that. Because to change our thinking, we have to change our paradigm. We cannot, you know, we can do affirmations till the cows come home. I am all intelligent, all powerful, all loving, all knowing. But if we're blocked in our power center, if there's a deep-rooted belief that we haven't sat with and shone the light of truth upon that says, you know, I'm not enough. I'm not the powerful one. There's not enough. Fill in the gaps. There's something wrong with me. Until that changes, we are not going to bring in this amazing good, this abundance. And deciding to live bravely, in my opinion, means being brave enough to go to the dark and lonely places. To not judge them as not spiritual. To know that they're all part of the journey. They're all part of the journey. And to deny, to only claim that we are joy and we are peace and we are love and we are harmony and we are grace and we are that. That's the changeless truth to be known. But if we deny our humanity, which is sometimes messy, am I the only one who is a messy human in the world? That sometimes has unskilled behavior. That sometimes forgets the truth of who I am or the truth of who someone else is. If we deny that, we're denying a part of ourselves. We're not claiming the wholeness that we're born to be. So I love to say we're perfectly divine and imperfectly human. And our job is to navigate those two. But our job, I believe, is to bring the power, the presence, the harmony, the grace of spirit down through our being, down through our bodies, and to notice where might it get stuck, because then we can recycle it back up again, right? Energy's either constricted or it's flowing. And where there's constriction, spirit can't get in. Where there's constriction, there's no room for spirit. Are you with me so far? Take a breath. It's good to breathe through this, right? Breath. Sometimes that's all it takes, is a nice big deep breath to bring spirit in. I think I told you last time I was here, I'm sure you don't remember, it was so long ago, about this book called What's in the Way is the Way. by Mary O'Malley.
Oh, you do?
That's it. What appears to be in the way, who appears to be in the way, is a part of our awakening. Spirit brings to us the people, places, resources, and things that we need to step into the fullness and wholeness and light and love of Spirit. You may have heard the story of Sam in the ashram. So there's a bunch of people with a guru in an ashram in India, and it's very devout and it's very serious. There's lots of meditation. They're vegetarian. They get up at 4 in the morning and chant, and they're all very committed to their spiritual practice. And there's one guy there, his name is Sam, and he is a disaster area. He makes noise during meditation. He unwraps sweets and makes a big noise. He's caught behind the kitchen eating bacon. You know, he says outrageous things. And they're all getting really tired of Sam. And one day the guru goes out of town. And they all go to Sam. And they say, hey man, you gotta go. You know, we're here to be all peaceful. We're here to be all still. And you're messing with our peacefulness. We can't have it. So they sort of gather him up and call a cab to send him home. And just as he's getting into it, the guru comes home and says, what are you doing? What are you doing? And they say, well, we're sending Sam home. He has to leave. Because we're committed to our peacefulness. We're committed to our spiritual practice, and he's messing with it. And the guru said, oh, no, no, no. You can't send Sam home. He's on the staff here. So we ask ourselves, who are the Sams, the Samanthas in our ashram? Who are those people? Because what we know is they may push our buttons, but they certainly didn't install them. Right. Course of Miracles says we're seldom upset for the reason we think. Couples fight. I'm going to be vulnerable and share. Because it's about being vulnerable. So in our house, I've been married for 25 years, and right now, the way, and I live in Santa Cruz, right now, my husband's a teacher, he's studying for his PhD, so I am at this point the one pretty much that does the cooking, and certainly dinner, right? And I love to cook and do all that, and my husband, at his own admittance, is a little picky sometimes, and he gets bored easily with food, I'm telling you all this, there's a reason for all of this. So a while ago, we went on a hunt. We decided because we're vegetarian and the way we eat, it would be really nice instead of plates to get two like large bowls that we could have our food in. So we found them, and that's what I served food in. One day, so I'd been feeling a little like criticized, feeling like, I'm not saying he was, ever had that feeling, like a little, noticing a little stirring. And he came home one day and came in the door, and I was making guacamole in a bowl at the time. And he said, could I have my dinner on a plate this time? Now that's all he said. And I went ballistic. I lost it. This was not a high ministerial moment. This was not a high moment, no matter who I am, as a being on the planet. You want, but I won't tell you what I said. That's all you have to think about? Dinner and a plate? And so it was so outrageous that, you know, I really had to say, Angela, get a grip. The man asked for dinner on a plate. What's going on? Now, I could have just prayed it all away. But I do like to practice what I preach. I sat with myself, and I know that, you know, I asked, what is it that's really going on here? It's not about the plate. You know, we always say couples fight, and it's never about the dishes. It's about something else. What's going on? How come you're so angry? And what I realized is that some part of me, still after all these years, was seeking his approval from my making dinner. Take a breath. Because still, after all these years of practitioner, minister, breath work, all the work that I've done, and I'm sharing this because I believe I'm not the only one, there was still in me a little girl who never got daddy's approval. And with all I knew intellectually, on some level with my husband Sonny, I was still playing that out. Does that make sense? So when he said, can I have a plate? I went to, I'm not doing it right. I'm not doing it right. When he says, could we not have da-da-da again? Or whatever little comments that had been leading up to that. And he's a very loving, you know, he's pretty innocent in all of this to some degree, except for being a little picky. Right? It was me, each time there was feedback or a comment, I was feeling. And I was able to then change my, get it, my goodness, and cook dinner from a place of love. Cook dinner from a place of love, not needing anything from him, because I do him a disservice. I do anybody a disservice if I'm doing something because I need something back from them. Make sense? Whether it's their approval, whether it's their gratitude, whether it's their acknowledgement, whether it's their validation, that's not pure. That's not pure love. And I'm not a bad person because I had a wound inside of me, and neither are any of you. We all have wounds. And if we tend to them, we have to tend to them. We have to shine the light of unconditional love and acceptance, radical self-love, on those parts. Because the moment we're on our knees, so to speak, everything cracks open and then there's room for spirit to come in. Does that make sense? And then we can say, those people that upset us the most, and are we not being called in this country right now to see who our Sam is? I'm not saying any names. Who our Sam is? How do we practice? How do we practice? We practice by being authentic. We practice by tracking our feelings and having the courage to look. We practice because we come from this place of knowing religious science, science of mind, is no longer, I believe, and really never was, about attracting palaces, parking spaces, and, you know, people. It was never about we never get sick. We never get angry. We always have enough money in the bank, right? This was the old school. Where if a minister sneezed and had a cold, people would say, what do you do to create that? Thank God, we've come a long way. We take a look at what's showing up in our life and we use it without judgment. Isn't it interesting? I've got this appearance of disease in my body. Isn't it interesting I'm having that reaction? Isn't it interesting I'm noticing depression in my body? But it's from love. And then we use the principles and the tools to be with the challenges in our life. We cannot change other people. Anyone ever try? All we can do is change the way we are around them and with them. That's our calling, right? So I've gone completely blank just right now. So we daring to live bravely, deciding to live bravely. Is this journey of shining that light, of saying, as the Course in Miracles says, what if you but knew that every event, past, present, and yet to come, was gently placed by one whose only purpose was your highest and greatest good? What if we knew that? What if we knew there's a power for good? It wants only our highest and greatest good. So everything that shows up on the plate of life is there for that purpose. It may not feel good. It may hurt deeply. We may not understand it, and we certainly are entitled to not like it. And practicing the principles, I believe, is standing rooted in the faith and the courage of God, Goddess itself, saying, there's a divine reason for this. Let me walk through it. I wanted to read from, this is actually Nietzsche. It was on a text someone sent me, so let me just pull it up right here. If I can't find it quickly, I'm not going to, but I had it all queued up. Here we go. So actually, this is quoted in the Joseph Campbell book, and he says, Nietzsche was the one who did the job for me. At a certain moment in his life, the idea came to him of what he called the love of your fate. Whatever your fate is, whatever the hell happens, you say, this is what I need. It may look like a wreck, but go at it as though it were an opportunity, a challenge. If you bring love to that moment, not discouragement, you will find the strength is there. Any disaster that you can survive is an improvement in your character, your stature, and your life. What a privilege. This is when the spontaneity of your own nature will have a chance to flow. Then, when looking back at your life, you will see that the moments which seem to be great failures, followed by wreckage, were the incidents that shaped your life. You shaped the life you have now. You'll see that this is really true. Nothing can happen to you that is not positive. Take a breath. Even though it looks and feels at the moment like a negative crisis, it is not. The crisis throws you back, and when you are required to exhibit strength, it comes. Isn't that beautiful? When you are required to exhibit strength, it comes. We've seen this. One of the things I like to do is to watch documentaries on Netflix, excuse me, and Prime Video and all of that. And the reason I love them is because it speaks to this. It speaks to people suffering with a disease or maybe even dying of a disease. And their willingness to be with the process. Their willingness to hold the truth of love and joy and being in the present moment, and the willingness to be on their knees. Last night I watched one that was, I forget his name, but he did 50 Ironmans in 50 days in 50 states. Can you imagine? Superhuman. And it followed, you know, it's a documentary following all that. And there were times where he was literally on his knees. He was angry. He was pissed off. He'd had enough. He got a lot of social media. They started sort of negating him and putting him down. And he let all that get in his head. And he wanted to give up. And he hated it. And his body was sore, to say the least. And what I loved about this is that the people, the team that were supporting him, allowed him to be in whatever state he was in. Now, not forever, because there was a marathon, but you know, there was 50 states in 50 days, but not to say, oh, come on now, to let him holler a bit. At one point, he fell off his bike. He would fall asleep on his bike because he was getting no sleep. and doing this amazing thing. Nobody said you don't have a right to these feelings. They held space for him. And then they helped him get back up. And he succeeded. And it wasn't easy. And that neither is our journey. It's not always easy. And we do have within us the courage and the strength and the power and the wisdom and the love to rise up again and again and again. So the invitation is to breathe deep, to let ourselves be fully, wholly human beings, to let the energy from deep within our being open up, to allow ourselves to be the human beings that we are, and to let the divine that we are shine the light of love and acceptance upon those broken, maybe those appearances of broken, lonely, scared little parts. This is the Brené Brown work, right? Of the courage to be vulnerable. Do we have the courage to be vulnerable? Do we have the courage to let that be and know still that there is no power greater than spirit? Because that's the truth, isn't it? Here we sit. Each one of us has a story. Each one of us has a story of redemption. Each one of us has a story of realization. Each one of us has trekked across the desert and had heartache and pain and loss. Or anyone not? And here we are. Here we are. And the fact that we're here says, I'm still here because I still stand with the faith of God, and there's a power in me greater than all of it. Somewhere along the road, when we were born, we left, to some degree, our bodies and our souls. And we were sort of instigated into a society that is all about the mind and the ego. And it's time for this shift to happen, where we come back fully, mind, body, and soul, into our bodies, into our soul, into our beings. That's where the healing happens. That's where manifestation happens. It happens from our power chakra, which also happens to be a place where stuff gets wadded up and constricted. So if you're not manifesting what you feel like you've been praying for and affirming and setting intentions over, keep doing all of that, but ask, is there a paradigm deep within me that needs to shift? Is there an energy of a little girl or boy in there still looking for approval? Is there sadness? You know, Eckhart Tolle calls it the pain body. We all have a pain body. Our separation from spirit, from the light, is our original, the first pain we had, the deepest pain. That's what Ernest Holmes says, right? Really, the only belief that needs to be healed is our belief that we're separate from God. But we are not that pain body. Eckhart Tolle says, I am not what happens to me. I am the spaciousness in which it happens. We are the spaciousness, the expansion, the love of spirit. And within that beautiful container of ours, we have feelings that come up. We have states of being. We have illness or dis-ease that may appear in our body, but they're not the spiritual truth of who we are. When we know this, we can step back and say, ah, I notice. I notice when he said he wanted a plate, his dinner on a plate, the pain body got activated. Let me remember who I am and tend to this part that needs tending to. So we breathe deeply. We do the body work. We do the stuff that brings us down here somehow. And we stay open in our energy centers that connect us with spirit, both is necessary. Let's take a breath. And notice without judgment that when I speak of vulnerability, when I speak of the pain body, when I speak of these feelings, there's almost like a collective breath withhold in the room. We go, and when we go, it's tight in here. Notice when you hold your breath. Notice. Simple place to practice. Notice where, when you take a deep, full, cleansing breath, where it's not open. And practice breathing from deep, deep down, and not to judge yourself. And notice when you're holding your breath, be the witness, because that's a clue right there. So I invite you to come this afternoon, obviously I do, to breathe in a beautiful place, breath work, with the beautiful sounds of the gongs that are really take us in deep to our soul's energy. To breathe deeply, it's everything I just talked about, but condensed into an hour or an hour and a half. You breathe, and you may go through some of these things that I've talked about. May go through some of those things that the people in the documentaries I watched go through. But I guarantee you, and I think anyone who's done it before here in this room will agree, that you will feel spirit in a really powerful way at the end of that workshop, at the end of breath work. Because what happens is exactly what I've been talking about. You have brought spirit into your body. You have breathed in and breathed out. And you have lived bravely and allowed whatever stands in the way of you and being the amazing being that you're born to be. You have allowed it to just come up. And then spirit comes flooding in a beautiful way. So let me end by these words from Raymond Charles. I could really pick this book up anywhere. The infinite mind, being infinite, could not create a limited creation. You are the unlimited creation of an unlimited source that is forever giving to you in its unlimited ideas, possibilities, and potentialities. Its nature is to release itself in you as you. It cannot withhold its ideas. By its very nature, it must express itself through man, woman. It must express itself. We are the creation and we are the creator. So let's create powerfully. Let's create with our whole body, our whole mind, our whole being. And let us know there is nothing missing. There is nothing missing. There is nothing broken. You're perfect and beautiful and lovely and radiant as the divine beings that you are. Let us pray. And let us know this, taking in these words from Raymond Charles Barker, taking in this truth, that there is a power for good. There's a power for beauty, truth, and goodness that I choose to call spirit, the divine I am, God, Goddess itself. And it's everywhere in everyone and everything. And there's no place where it's not. Spirit is alive in creation, and creation is alive in spirit. It's the deepest love, the brightest light, the harmony, the peace, the joy of the divine givingness of spirit. And spirit pours itself in creation. We feel it in the beauty of this summer day. We sense it in the love between family and friends. It's palpable here in this very room. There's no place where spirit is not. And it's alive in me. And it's alive in each one in this room and all the sentient beings everywhere. We are all one with the divine I am. There is that part of us that has never left the unified field. So we have never left the vibration of spirit. We have never left the high vibrational frequencies of peace, of love, of joy, of freedom, of wholeness. We're always dialed in. We're always aligned. Our quantum self, our divine self. We're manifestations of love itself from the one heart. We're cells in the divine organism, gems of the one wisdom where we are, spirit is. How blessed are we that this divine life chose to express itself in its own unique way through and as each one of us. So we remember our uniqueness this day. We remember that each one of us is here by divine appointment, placed on the planet at this time, and that each one of us has our own unique gifts and talents and light to share. So we let go of needing to compare ourselves. We let go of needing to be perfect. Instead, we just choose, we decide to live life bravely, to welcome all of it, to trust and know what's in the way really is the way. It's the way to more freedom, more joy, more love, more loosening of constricted energy. Spirit is in the midst of all of it. And we allow ourselves to be fully, wholly human beings, knowing that the divine power within us is still the greatest power. And I'm knowing for us that we do the best we can to keep those high vibrational frequencies going. No matter what is going on, no matter what we're feeling, we don't pitch a tent in our feelings. We don't stay there for years. We tend to them, but we're with them. And when the time is right, we move on. We move on to the next. And how grateful I am to know that we are each other's support during this time. The beauty of spiritual community is that if we forget this truth for ourselves, we merely have to ask someone else to know and hold it for us, for there is one mind. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for those angels in disguise that show up in our life to push those buttons, to call that self-healing mechanism that each of us is into practice. I'm grateful to know that our life is our spiritual practice. Day-to-day life is our spiritual practice. And above all, I give thanks for knowing that living bravely means deciding to love ourselves with such sweetness, such gentleness, and such tenderness. It means simply letting go of the inner judge and the critic. Because as we open our hearts to ourselves, as we're accepting and gentle and kind with ourselves, we extend that to everybody, everybody, and everyone, everywhere. And I'm grateful for the freedom and the wholeness and the power and the love of spirit. The greatest changeless truth back of everything. And as I release my word to the very soul of the universe, the immutable, unchanging law, I know that there already exists a divine pattern of perfection for each of our lives, for the life of this planet. All good is already there. It's already done. So all we do is we allow it, we allow it. We allow it by being open vessels of spirit. We allow the energy to flow through us. We allow ourselves to receive the good. We anchor ourselves in high vibration, love, peace, and joy. And all of this makes itself known through us as us in its own divine way and in its own divine time. So I give thanks for this. I give thanks for this opportunity to be here this day, for all beauty in the room and all beauty everywhere. And I let it rest and I let it be. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.